The rearview mirror is clearer than the windshield. This is Instant Inspiration. Dr. Hervé L. Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campo, California, talking about rearview mirrors and how they're clearer than the windshield. Now, anybody who's got any kind of moxie realizes the rearview mirror is inside the car and doesn't get dirtied with all the schmutz that comes onto it from outside the car. And the windshield gets everything. Everything hits the windshield. Dirt, rocks, stones, birds, bees, caterpillars, what have you. Okay. But the rearview mirror is clearer than the windshield. Well, I think what we mean here is not necessarily the rearview mirror. What we mean is the rear window through which the rearview mirror looks. The rearview mirror looks through the rear window and sees it, and it is usually quite clear. Now, there are people who say it is not because they don't wipe it off very often. But it is not in the habit of causing dirt to climb up on the window. It's just that you don't wash it as often as you do the front one. If you press the button, the rear windshield wiper goes on, if you have a rear windshield wiper, it goes on. And, of course, not all cars do. My Mazda does it. I don't know. Do you have one on the Windstar and on the Expedition? Mm-mm. And, yes, on the Expedition, you have a rear view. Wiper? You have a rear wiper, very much so. Huh? Yes. And in the truck, you don't have it. So, these are just things to think about. So, the rear view mirror is clearer than the windshield. In other words, the view we get to the rear view mirror is usually clearer than the windshield. And it is a good view that you get. However, most people don't use their rear view mirror. They use their side view mirrors, and they turn around and look out the back, but they haven't learned to trust the rear view mirror. And the reason they haven't learned to trust the rear view mirror is that they haven't learned to trust themselves. There is Kung Fu, if you recall, and he was put into the direction of a teacher, and the teacher was blind, and the teacher knew everything. He was blind to physical sight, but he saw in a spiritual sight in a most beautiful way. And he said to his student, "Be careful. Don't step on the grasshopper." And the kid says, "What grasshopper?" You know, he looked down, there was a grasshopper. How did this blind man know there was a grasshopper there? The kid was making noise. The world around was making noise. There was activities going on around him, and he heard the grasshopper. Now, how did he hear the grasshopper, which was not offensive and certainly not noisy and certainly not asking to be noticed? How did he hear it? Well, he heard it because he taught himself how to listen. He taught himself how to be aware of everything about him, not necessarily make a big deal out of it, but how to be aware of everything around him. And he taught himself how to look through his rearview mirror, his side view mirrors, his front mirror, front windshield, through everything. He was able to see and be aware of everything. Now you say, "Well, that's just a story. It probably wasn't true." Well, it was true. There are many people in this world whom you don't know, nor do I, and these are people who are blind, and they're living in a world in which they're blind, and yet they are not giving up on life. They're living very wonderfully, and they are tuning their inner sensitivity to a way in which we, who are sighted, will never do, because we don't have to. We don't have to learn to listen within. We don't have to learn to hear what's going on around us. We don't have to not only hear it, but interpret what it is. How did he know that was a grasshopper and not a cricket? you know, or a frog or a toad. How did he know that it was not some other creature? But he knew because he tuned into it. Anything that drew his attention, he drew his inner attention to at the same time. I worked with a lady with Thelma, who was a psychology and psychiatry teacher in University of Southern California in Los Angeles. And Thelma was quite a girl. She was teaching all of these special things like Carilion photography, where you read the energy of the body and you take pictures of it. And one feature that I think I've told you about before is she had this blind girl come to her class. And the blind girl was to demonstrate to the class some of the things that she could do. Now, the blind girls didn't say, "Oh, I can't do that, I might not make it. She just said, "Sure." I mean, she learned her lesson. So she went before the class. And as she went before the class, she had her guide dog with her. And she went up on the front platform with me and Thelma, and we were talking to her. And her dog decided to get up and wander among the audience and be petted and be appreciated. And so she spoke up and said, "I would appreciate it if none of you would pet my dog, because I don't want him to get accustomed to going around and making friends with people. He has one job, and that is to be my guide. And if I let him go around and being friendly with others, he soon will not have my scent as his only scent. And I want him to be aware only of me. Other people are there, but not for him to go and be friendly with." She says, "I hope you understand I'm not trying to be mean or discourteous to you, but this is a guide dog. He is on duty right now. He's a work dog. We're not at home in the evening where he could just relax and roll over and have fun. Right now, he's working, and he should be up here right with me." And just at that moment, the dog turned and went up and sat down next to him. Like, "Sorry, Mom." I got the message. Well, she was demonstrating to the class how she could tell the colors of different construction paper. This is the paper that children use in their school classwork. A thick colored paper, many colored, that is, each paper has a different color. Yellow, blue, brown, red, black, white, you name it. Okay, well, she took these colored papers and she observed them. And she felt them, but I think the feeling was for show, because she zeroed in to what they were. She knew what she was doing, and the feeling had nothing to do with it. Then she says, "All right, now I have two here that I cannot tell you what they are." And we all thought, "My goodness, you know, she's so good getting everything else. Why less?" She says, "White and black are the same. White and black are exactly the same to me. I cannot tell the difference between them." And you say, "White is white, you know. Kind of brilliant. Black is nothing. Black, you know, dark." But that's what she said. Why? I never did research her reasoning into this, or, you know, her reason for this, but that's what she said. She was able to do many other things, many other wonderful things. She listened intuitively. And she would say, "Okay, now," she'd refer to somebody in the class, in a different row, and she'd tell what row they're in, what seat they're in, and then she'd say, "Now, they have some problem, you know, like a psychic reading sort of thing," but she couldn't see them, and she couldn't know anything about them. She had no way of knowing where they were going to be in the room ahead of time. It was not a put-up job. It was just something that she said, "You can all tune in to your inner self and know all these things too. You can all tune in to your inner self. Just because you tune in to your inner self, that doesn't mean you're going to know all things. Because you then begin to interpret what you hear and what you are seeing." And you see, this is why all the rest of us have such difficulty in really enjoying our rearview mirror. When you put your attention to your rearview mirror, what do you do? You're glued to it. You have to focus into it and center into it and then reposition your thinking that it's in the back of the car and that it's not only in the back of the car, but it's in the reverse of what it is, because the mirror, rearview mirror, is showing you the reverse of what you're seeing back there. You know how that is, the mirror. And you don't realize that you're doing that, but think about it. Next time you get in the car, look in the rearview mirror with the conscious realization that you're looking at it backwards, and you're also readjusting yourself to make it go forward. Just like with your eyes. What do you see with your eyes?
Upside down.
You see it right side up with your mind, but your eyes see it upside down. Your eyes see a totally different picture from what your mind is seeing. Now, why is the mind translating that picture into a right side up picture when perhaps it really should be upside down? Maybe upside down is normal. But now, think of this. Not very many, but some people are not able to translate. They see everything upside down.
Oh, they do?
Yep. There are some people who are dyslexic and they see things in backwards. They see writing in reverse, and they see a lot of these things. This is not common, but it's not uncommon. And they have to be trained to think in a different way, to educate themselves that what they see is really contrary. Now, just imagine going through life having to tell your inner self that what you see is not what you see. It is contrary. Just imagine going through life telling yourself that what you see is not really what you see, but it's contrary. Just imagine going through life telling yourself that what you see is not what you see, but contrary. Sounds interesting, doesn't it? Sounds very interesting. It sounds just like our life. We think that what we see is what we see, is what we get, but it is not. What you see is the creation of your thought. What you see is not at all what you see. You are maybe the 50th or 150th or 1,050th idea down the line before you really take hold of what you're looking at. Now, you may look at Ingeborg over here. She's sitting here, and you think to yourself, well, now, Ingeborg is sitting there, and she has a bluish sweater on, and she's very concentrating and very much awake because I'm pointing this right to her. And so that's Ingeborg. Now, get inside of Ingeborg and figure out what she's thinking, what thoughts are going through her mind. And the thoughts that may be going through her mind right now might be a continuation of what she was doing before. She might be mentally thinking, now, somewhere in the first couple pages of the dictionary is the information that we were looking for. Somewhere, somehow, I kind of think, and it's not 13C, but it's 13A, or maybe it's 17C. I wonder what it's going to be. So she goes back and forth, and then she finds it in 14R, you know, a totally different place. But the thing is, she looks and lets herself see it. Now, she has come to this conclusion by trial and error. And so as she's looking at me now, she's seeing the proper use of mankind, of man, of present tense or future tense, or of the personal pronoun, or the plural, or the singular. She's looking at all those possibilities. And does that have anything whatsoever to do with what I'm talking about? Yes, it does.
Wow, yeah.
Now it does. Yes, now it does. And you see, you would think that it wouldn't. You would think that that'd be so contrary. But that's just what our minds do. Our minds work in a very, very contrary way, and we are expected to come up balanced. Can you imagine how difficult it is for little children for you to say one thing, and then because circumstances change, but you don't tell them, you do something different, and they say, well, why didn't you do that? Well, I didn't have time to explain to you, but this is why, you know. Well, they don't want to hear that. They want to be in on the whole deal. Now, if you start bringing the child in on the whole deal, he'll soon get very tired of it. And that's enough. Okay, yes, that's your business. But up until the time that they ask and don't get the answer, then they want to be in on it. But you see, that's looking through the rearview mirror. You're teaching your children that they don't have to be in on everything. They don't have to be privy to all the knowledge that you're studying and working on. All they need to do is just love themselves and enjoy whatever they're doing. And this is for us too. Will the day come that Sylvia will ever be able to tell that there's a little worm crawling by her chair there? Will Sylvia ever be able to realize that? Maybe. When she goes blind? No, let's not put that on her. When she does what?
When she listens.
Now, tonight, when you go to bed, lay down and say for the first 5 minutes or so, I am listening to sounds that I really never heard before. I'm listening to them. I'm listening to sounds I really never heard before. Now, what are those sounds? And don't open your eyes. Keep your eyes closed. What are those sounds? And then you put names to it. You put a name like, well, that's a mosquito, you know, or that's a fly. And those are common, easy ones. Or you say, that's a daddy long legs. You know what daddy long legs is? You know, it's a spider with the big long legs. And I keep getting him in my sink. And I say, you guys make it tough on yourself. And so I brush him out. He crawls back in again. You know, I said, you're a pity to your race. But they're there, and they have fun. And then stop and listen. And don't say what it is. Let it tell you what it is. You know what I mean? Let the spider tell you that it is there. Let the worm tell you that it's crawling along there. Or let the fleas tell you that they're there.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. But whatever it is, let it talk to you and explain to you what it is and what it's doing there. And don't say, boy, I goofed, that's not it. Oh, I did. Don't even look. Don't even look. You see, perfection comes by trusting yourself, not by checking yourself. You hear that?
Yeah.
Perfection comes by trusting yourself, not comparing yourself. And you know, you don't have to correct it. You don't have to check to see if you're correct. You don't have, you just trust yourself. You believe in it. And then the next night, that's tonight you're going to the first part. The next night, you spend another 5 or 10 minutes. It's good stuff. And you begin listening and listening and listening. And you don't listen with panic. You listen with sort of a joy. I wonder what that is. Huh. Don't hear a darn thing. You know, and you listen. But you see, what happens first is all the confusion of your mind, all the ringing in your ears, and all of the singing of whatever is going on in your head, it sort of quiets down. And when it quiets down, then your blood pressure goes down. And you become peaceful. You become harmonious. And all of the tension, blood pressure is tension, and all of the tension dissipates, disappears. And then you begin to hear. That's quite exciting. And quite interesting. I'm not going to tell you what are the first things that you're going to really hear.
I know.
Huh?
I know what I hear first.
You think you do? Oh, well, you got them. No, Ellen, you go beyond them.
Okay.
Now, if the streetcar went by and other things. Now, when Kung Fu's master was telling him, there's a cricket next to you, there's a, you know, what did he say? He said, with all this noise around here, you tell me there's a grasshopper down there? How could you hear him, you know? And he listened to what he wanted to listen to. You see, every sound, I was going to say noise, but every sound has its own unique beat, its own unique vibrations. And it's like a mother cow She's standing in the middle of the field, and with all the other cows, and her little kid, her calf, comes running up to her and nuzzling her and saying, "I'm home, Mom, ready for lunch," you know, right to her own mother. Out of the hundreds of cows that are in the field, and a little calf's running all over, but every calf, zero right on in. And that's America. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. But you see, that's intuitive. That's, what would you say, what term is for that? They can do that because this is within their
instinct.
That's a good word, right? Yeah. It's in their instinct to do that. But there's even a better word than instinct. But it's in their instinct to do that. But they go far beyond that. Because what they have another term too. It's called
Smell.
Marking the smell, marking, encoding. Such a simple word. Anyhow, when the baby calf, the mother licks the calf and washes it off, and then the calf, of course, is close to the mother. And knows the mother's scent, and knows the mother's and the branding, or there's the word for it. It'll come, but it's the word of bonding. You know, that's the word, bonding. It's a bonding between the parent and the child, and the parent always knows the child, and the child always knows the parent. Now, are humans like that? Not quite. Not quite. The kid screams, "Mommy, where are you?" in the department store, you know. And everybody says, "I wonder where his mother is. How could she be so terrible and let that child wander off by himself?" Well, he was down among the legs, you know, and he got lost in the sea of legs. And mother finally shouts out, "You know, here I am, sweetheart." And he zeroes straight on into her. But the thing is, why didn't he just zero straight on into her? Why is his instinct not so creatively built as a bonding for the mother to child as it is in an animal? Yes.
If he's not emotional, he does.
I imagine. I imagine. If the child were just to say, "Okay, I'm done playing here. Let's see, where's Mom?" Okay. Yeah, and then go right to her. And that's true. That's true. That has happened many times. Many times. Yeah. She can be in the strangest place, according to him, and he goes right to her. Yeah, this bonding. How do we understand it? When we look through the rear view mirror and see these things all in converse order and see them all completely strange to us, and yet our mind readjusts it. Just as it does when our sight sees things upside down, it readjusts it and balances us so that we are able to work harmoniously as a unit, you know. It's amazing. It's really amazing. Yeah. There are some cameras that do the switcheroo, and they never caught on because people don't need them. People do the switcheroo themselves, and everything falls into place. You know what I mean? They switch the upside down to right side up.
Yeah.
And if you had a camera that did that for you, which could be just a double helix lens in there, but if you had that sort of thing, you know, you really would be confused because it would turn right side up what you had upside down. But you had turned right side up, so now it being right side up would be upside down. For if what you look like is right side up, then you're going to have to switch it from right side up to upside down to right side up again.
That's right.
Because you are not able to work with it in its craziness, you know.
Yeah.
But you see, that's... And when you really get to think about it, that's the illogicalness of all these things. The rearview mirror is clearer than the windshield. And why is the rearview mirror clearer than the windshield? If you learn to use your rearview mirror harmoniously, reversing what you have reversed and reversing away, follow? Then you will be able to handle most anything. But the majority of the people do not like to use a rearview mirror because it puts a strain on their translation business. They have to translate the up from down to in to out to side to side. What's on the left is on the right, and what's on the right is on the left, and what's up is down, and what's down is up. I mean, that's a lot. See, right now, as we look at it straight away, we only see upside down and right side up. We don't see left to right and right to left, because that just falls into place. But in the rearview mirror, you are turning it in reverse already by having it in the mirror. And then the mirror is shining it back to you, and so you're getting a double reverse, which should have put it into a normal way, which it may have done. But it all depends on where you are in your consciousness. If you're looking at it, reversing it instantly, and then it comes back already reversed, and then you have to reverse that and then reverse it again. I'm not kidding you. It is the logic of sight is one of the most delightful games we could ever imagine. But that's not all. You know, if I hit you on the right side of your head, you're going to feel it in your left foot. You know, and the same with the left side, you feel the right foot. And it doesn't make sense, you know. And the meridians of the body acting upon the body and its functions in so many different ways. Ways that are illogical, unreasonable. You put a pin in somebody's toe and their eye hurts. Mm-hmm. And the person has a toothache and their toe hurts. You know, why isn't this thing all bounced together? Because it's one of the great enigmas of the world. Mm-hmm. A beautiful one, a very beautiful one. But can you see when philosophers say three gods were sitting in a boat fishing, mm-hmm. and they were discussing where to hide man's identity, man's reality, and so they play this game? That's not as far off as it sounds. Mm-hmm. Because the divine must be having a most delightful time challenging us to be logical when there is no logic whatsoever in anything that is to be done or that is, you know, causing us to think that there's something that there isn't. Logic isn't. Relationships aren't. Relationships are whatever you make them. If you like a person and like a person and like a person, whether they like you or not, you like that person. And if you like a person and they don't like you, so you don't like them because they don't like you, and well, that's nothing at all. That's nothing at all. That it has pure logic, but you got to follow it back and forth. A very jumbled logic, but that's fine. So, think about it. We have this clear rearview mirror, and what is it shining to us? It shines to us absolute confusion, and yet we can handle it very easily, very easily. So, have a good day, and I'll come back and confuse you another time. I love you.
Thank you.